I want to give the Senate leadership credit, Senator McCain. This is the first time in 3 years that, and he kept his word, he promised that he would get the full Senate to vote on the Senate Armed Services Committee's bill, and he did that. So that's a good thing. I think, you know, the House, though, had the better bill for people, in that they were much more cautious and concerned about the pocketbook issues. I'm disappointed in myself that we couldn't convince some of our good friends on both sides of the aisle in the Senate to adopt more of the House positions on pay and housing and health care costs and the commissary.
Uniformed service members will get a 1.3% pay raise effective January 1st. Is that good or bad? Were you hoping for more?
That's disappointing because, you know, they're supposed to get the full ECI, which is 2.3. So this is the third year in a row that they have not gotten the pay raise that they deserve. And so we're worried that this is a very, very bad signal, bad trend for the all-volunteer force and the families that are sitting around the table after 10 years of repeated deployments and wondering if they should make a career of it, and they all have a lot of choices. And so we wish that they would have, you know, gone with the House proposal of 2.3 and not supported the Pentagon and the president.
But it could be worse. I mean, flag officers and generals won't get any pay raise.
Well, the flag officers and generals get a lot more money to start with. And the retirement is a very lucrative retirement now in that they get over 30 years. They still get over 30 years. They get credit for that. So what we're really concerned about, Emily, is that E5, the non-commissioned officer in any of the services, or the O3, the young officer in any of the services that's been in for about 10 years of war, our most combat-tested leaders at the NCO and officer level, sitting around with a family of four, wondering if they should stay in, if it's worth going another 10 years. And as proud as the families and they are about serving, the trend is not good. You know, it doesn't look like the deployments are going to get any shorter or less frequent because we're cutting the Army and Marine Corps significantly, and the Navy still got 7 and 8 month deployments, and the Air Force is doing the same. So they're looking at repeated deployments and nothing but a repeated effort to pay and compensate them less. So it's a bad signal for the all-volunteer force, and we're really worried that this, if this continues, the all-volunteer force could head in the ditch in both particularly retention of these mid-grade NCOs and officers. That's the future of the all-volunteer force, that E5 and O3 that have to make a decision with his or her family.
Does the conference report make any stab at retaining people in specialties that the force critically needs, such as cyber or nuclear, places where they've had problems keeping people?
Well, you know, the services always need the flexibility of bonuses, and I think both the House and the Senate realize that, and they're doing everything they can to give them the flexibility there. But, you know, I don't want to lose sight of, in the football vernacular, of the blocking and tackling. You know, these folks that are in these unusual skill sets, you're talking about hundreds of people. I'm more worried about the thousands and tens of thousands that do the blocking and tackling for this nation, the infantrymen in both all the services, and the warfighters that have to go forward in mass. And so those are the folks that we're worried about the most. I think the Congress is paying attention, and certainly the Pentagon is paying attention to those small skill sets that are very important, but aren't the heart and soul of the military.
Almost eclipsing the pay raise, I would say, is the new hybrid retirement system that this conference report endorses. This is something that would reduce the pension for new entrants or for those who have less than 12 years of service, and in exchange offer the TSP, the Thrift Savings Plan. Mm-hmm. In your opinion, how does this impact service members?
It does help the folks that don't go to retirement. It gives them a much bigger benefit. With the government giving them 1% and then getting them the opportunity to be matched up to another 5%. So this does help the 83% that don't make it for a career. And so that's a good thing. We just wish it wouldn't have been done at the expense of the 17% that we need to go to a career, a 20-year career. And, of course, the majority of those are non-commissioned officers. And so we are still worried that there's not enough incentive in difficult times like that we've confronted for the last 13 years or so of war, where there's not enough pull for that mid-grade NCO or officer at the 10-year point for her or him to make the commitment to stay for 20 or for 30. We're very pleased that the House and the Senate at least moved up the benefit to where they'll continue to match up to 26 years. We think it's needed all the way up to 30, but 26 was a good compromise to start with, and so we're very pleased that they listened to us in the Defense Department on that issue. So we'll just have to see. This is the will of the Congress. We wish there would be still more of a pull for those that we want and need to spend a career, because that is the heart and soul of the all-volunteer force.
Do you think that this is going to impact people's decisions to stay in the military at all?
It eventually will. You know, it doesn't take effect until 2018. So it's just like when they instituted Redux. It took about 10 years before you saw what it was going to do to career retention. And that's what we're concerned about. We've been blessed, this millennial generation, knowing there's a war going on, and only a certain number, a small percentage of them, are even qualified to come into service. We've been able to recruit, thanks to the work of the Congress, really, enough good people to man the all-volunteer force, even in time of war, extended war. But now we're worried. They're undermining the health care, and they're certainly undermining the career retirement with this new retirement proposal. So it's got us concerned and worried, and I'm disappointed that we at MOA weren't more effective, but we are pleased that they agreed to extend the match until 26 at least.
This came out of a Blue Ribbon Commission's recommendations.
Something that the Congress, you know, and the president appointed people at a commission, and the commission did as good a job as they could. They were very conscientious. We all had a chance to weigh in. And really, in this town, when you get your chance to weigh in and give your point of view, that's all you can ask. You're never going to win all the decisions. So they came up with what they thought would be something that would attract the millennials and the future folks that would be coming into the all-volunteer force. We have disagreements with them, but we think this plan can work, but it's going to require some adjustments going forward, like any plan. And we're very worried about, you know, having the right education. This isn't, you know, this is more like a civil service or a civilian retirement plan. And unfortunately, the conditions of service are not the same for people in the military. It's going to be hard to get them the financial education and the knowledge that they need to make the kind of decisions they need. And they're going to need a lot of help in the education area. These are people that are just as smart as their civilian counterparts, but when you're ducking bullets or flying airplanes in a combat zone, you don't have much time to think about your financial situation and whether or not you ought to move from equity to bonds or something like that. So this is the problem with putting a civilian-type-like retirement program onto a group whose conditions of service are vastly different.
Let's move on to healthcare, because that's another really big topic. And it seems like in some ways, some big issues have been kicked down the road, but there are changes coming, especially where prescription drugs are concerned.
Yes. And, you know, we have supported the Defense Department in trying to keep the TRICARE health system, but we're running out of patients, frankly. The Defense Department was able to say this year that they couldn't keep all the doctors ready if we had to switch to what the commission recommended, which was a more like a federal employee health benefit plan. And we stood by the Defense Department, but frankly, the Military Officers Association is getting quite worried that the Defense Department is not going to reform as quickly as they need to get a more efficient and effective healthcare system. And so we're going to have to take a hard look at the commission's recommendations next year and going forward, because the Defense Department has been quite disappointing in their effort to fight, the challenges of medical, like they do joint warfare. In joint warfare, there's no doubt that they're doing it jointly in the warfare area, but in the medical area, it's still woefully inadequate as far as we're concerned. And they're leaving billions of dollars in savings and a much more efficient and responsive healthcare system on the table because of the bureaucracy of having at least seven different groups get money for healthcare, instead of having a unified healthcare system where you could have all three of your surgeon generals, but you would have one person in charge of making sure you have a completely transparent healthcare system between the military system and the purchase providers that we have in TRICARE. So lots of work still to be done on that, and if defense doesn't start reforming, we're going to stop supporting their efforts.
Well, let me ask you this. There's some pretty tough language in the conference report that says, the current system hasn't kept pace with the outside healthcare world. All elements of the system have to be reevaluated, and we're going to have to increase fees and co-pays. Do you think Congress gets it?
I think the House gets it. Chairman Heck, the Personnel Subcommittee, gets it. We've had personal conversations with him. Chairman Thornberry gets it. I have done a poor job of convincing the Senate side with Senator Graham and his counterpart, and then also with Senator McCain and Senator Reid. I don't think we've done a good enough job of briefing them of how urgent it is that DOD step up the pace of reform. And as a result, patients are not getting seen in a timely fashion that they need to, just because they've got too many irons in the fire, too many people running the show. There's bureaucracy and turf warfare. And unfortunately, they're all well-intended, but somebody needs to step in, just as I think Chairman McCain and Chairman Thornberry are in the acquisition area. They need to be more assertive, and I think the House is ready to lead the charge on that. We're hopeful that we can be more influential and more persuasive next year on this. Otherwise, we may switch our allegiance to a recommendation that the commission came out with, which is TRICARE is a failing system. Because we've written to the secretary, we know that there are people over there that know the system needs to be changed, but the surgeon generals have been disappointing in their effort to reform and the pace at which they've done it. I think the department's Defense Health Agency has done an excellent job, but they only control a small part of the budget. And that's not going to get the job done for the military people and the retired people and the families that are counting on the system to get better.
I want to talk a little bit about some of the changes coming immediately to the system. Prescription drugs. Are people going to feel an impact with the changes here? They seem to be saying that if you go to a retailer, you're going to pay more. Well, that's something that's common in a lot of healthcare insurance plans.
Yeah. The problem, again, is the military. We put people in areas where there are no military treatment facilities, Emily. And if your child has an ear infection, you're not going to send your prescription to the mail order pharmacy, Express Scripts, where it may take a week to get the prescription. You're going to go out. And right now, the problem is that we have really increased the pharmacy fees to the point where it's cheaper to go to the Walmart without any insurance and get your generic drug there for $4 than it is to go to the military system. So a military system that was supposed to be better than the civilian system is now getting outpaced by some civilian programs. And that's not the way it's supposed to be for those that have signed up to serve their nation and risk all. So we, again, think the House did a good job of slowing down these increases and getting to be as small as possible. But, we're disappointed that they had to go up at all before there's more reform in the Defense Department.
And this might show my ignorance, but I thought that there were no co-pays if you go to a military pharmacy.
Well, that's the problem, yeah. But like you said, what they're doing is a lot of people can't go to the military treatment facilities. They're guard and reserve, and they're not near a military pharmacy. And they may need a prescription you know, soon rather than later. It's not a maintenance drug like for blood pressure or diabetes or, you know, cholesterol. And so they need to go and get that prescription for the infection or whatever they need it for. And, you know, you've got to go to the retail pharmacy. So there are tens of thousands of our military people that are going to be disadvantaged, particularly the family members and the retirees that were made a promise.